All right, I guess I'll start. So since I only have a half hour, this is an hour talk, and I basically cut out all the introductory material. I assume everyone here is up to speed on galaxy formation and dwarf system stuff. So that's just a basic give you overview. If I tend to skip, seem like things have been skipped, it's because we're skipping right into the meat. Like, for example, I won't tell you anything about just those stories and books, anything like that. I will mention that my collaborator on this work is James Bullock, who will be here in a couple weeks. So if you don't get to ask questions to me or you don't think of things in time, you can ask him. And this is available as an AstroPH and will be published pretty soon, next few months. Okay, so I don't really need to review this, but everyone in this room knows about basically the problem of overcooling. If all the baryons inside dark matter halos cooled, you'd have the red line, which is a lot more groups of mass than you have observed. That's kind of the framework of what we're discussing here, and kind of, I would say, in many ways, a fundamental problem of galaxy formation. Just to make a concrete example, so numbers that will be easy to remember, you can estimate that the Milky Way's mass is between 4 to 6 times 10 to 10 solar masses, and the Milky Way's virial mass is something like 10 to 12. There's a reasonable estimate. I mean, there's obviously factors you can go back and forth, but I think ratio-wise, it's hard to make the ratio very different than this. So if you took the cosmological baryon fraction from WMAP, you get 17%, which would imply that the mass of baryons you should associate with the Milky Way halo is 17 times 10 to the 10th. And so the point, again, I'm just making the same point over again, there's basically three or four times as many baryons available in the Milky Way halo than are in the disk. Right? So the fundamental question is, how do you keep, where do the baryons go? How do they not in the center? Now, the standard picture of cooling, which I basically skipped everything else about, but I'm just showing the cartoon because cartoons are always good, is essentially you can define a cooling radius, and you basically say everything inside the cooling radius cools, and that's what forms your galaxy. The stuff outside the cooling radius can remain hot and form some kind of hot halo. So, I need one more click there. There it goes. Cools down. You got a disk. Get some hot gas. The result is, you can see, this basic picture significantly cuts down on the very, very high mass halos, which are mostly X-ray gas. That is, clusters don't form supergiant galaxies. They simply form giant galaxies that are too big. But you get this reduction, but you can see from the dashed line that we're still an order of magnitude away from what we would need as far as explaining the actual stellar masses of galaxies. All right, so to give the summary of this, of the scenario, the situation today, basically in a Milky Way-sized halo, you would expect two-thirds of the baryons to be able to cool. That would give you a galaxy that's roughly 12 times 10 to 10 solar masses. So people say supernova feedback or some form of feedback then occurs and gets rid of basically half of these baryons. Okay, and this also happens somehow without destroying the disk, right, which we see is thin. So you put that much energy into it, you manage to get rid of half the mass, but you manage to make the thing look just like it looked beforehand. And numerical simulations consistently fail to create such strong feedback. So you can ask the question, well, is there another solution? All right, and that's basically what I'm going to talk about, and that is to consider, instead of just single phase cooling, let's consider multi-phase cooling. And we know that a cooling plasma is hydrodynamically unstable, that the dense regions will get denser and cool quicker, the lower density regions will expand to fill out the space and cool slower, and then what you're going to get is a two-phase medium. How will that change this picture? Well, basically, I can do the same thing again. Can have some region where the gas is cool enough, is dense enough to cool. But now when it cools, instead of all falling directly into that galaxy in the center, it fragments and forms clouds and leaves a low-density hot background. And then you can see, well, it will take time for these clouds to make it from where they fragmented and cooled before they can get all the way to the galaxy. And so it's not unreasonable to imagine that in this picture, you're going to get less gas into the central galaxy. Let me also point out an important part, and that in the standard, at least simple analytic method, which is what's used in all semi-analytic models, the hot gas shell maintains itself somehow hundreds of kiloparsecs away from the galaxy without any physical force holding it up. Obviously, it's just a method of trying to estimate the mass, but it leads to an unphysical situation, so you can't really explore other issues. If you consider two-phase cooling, then there's a low-density hot medium inside, and that medium here is the dashed red line, can provide pressure support for the gas on the outside. So the picture you can think of is a consistent way. All right, so now one of the big things you have to consider is what are all the physical properties that will affect the clouds. And obviously that's a long and detailed discussion, which I had to cut out in order to make this a half hour. So I'll just give you the summary slide here. So there's a number of physical processes to worry about. The top white band is excluded because that would be where the cloud mass is equal to the total mass of baryons in the halo. Clearly, this doesn't mean anything to be a cloud that massive. The black band, it shows the Jeans mass. So clouds more massive than that will be unstable through their own gravitational attraction and possibly form stars. Vmax of the halo. So it's just this is just Vmax, so it's just the mass of the halo or the temperature of the halo, which are all the same as far as. Okay, if we go lower down, this orange band is the limit that you get from conduction. If you have hot gas and it can conduct, then if you have a perturbation that tries to grow to become a cloud, the conduction will basically dampen that out. So you have to have certain size before you're able to escape the conduction boundaries. And so this is a fifth Spitzer, 20% Spitzer. So obviously there's a lot to go in these lines, but these are just estimates. But we're looking at 10 orders of magnitude on the y-axis, so move the line up and down, factor of 2 or 3 if you want. It doesn't change anything. The green line, again, is related to conduction. Now we're talking about if the cloud was already there in the hot medium, how long would it take the hot medium to heat it back up and make it disappear? Okay, so evaporation over a time scale. So basically, if you're above the orange and green lines, then your cloud can sit there for something like the Hubble time, and it will be able to be around without being conducted away, even at Spitzer. That's a little bit higher than what I'm showing here, but you know, it's not that much clearer. The white band over here is Kelvin-Hamilton stability. If you're below the red dashed line in that white region, then the clouds would be unstable to Kelvin-Helmholtz and will be quickly destroyed in the dynamical time. But as long as they're outside that range, their cooling times are shorter than their sound crossing times. So when you develop an instability, it can't propagate through the cloud, and therefore the clouds maintain stability. And lastly, the purple dashed line shows where ram pressure becomes dominant over gravity, and so the clouds basically become ballistic and they don't realize they're in a gravitational potential anymore. They just feel this ram pressure. Above that line, gravity is more important, and so there's ram pressure force, but it's negligible compared to gravitational force. And the point of all this is to show you that there's this large region in here where you can have clouds that are they're not gravitationally bound, they're pressure confined, but they don't evaporate, they're able to form of conduction. They're ballistic, they're not controlled by ram pressure, they're moving around like bowling balls, and they're stable against Kelvin-Helmholtz stability. So there's larger regions where different factors come in, but there's also a large region where basically the clouds are just pressure confined blobs that move around. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so now what is the effect of this? Well, if we assume that the clouds only get into the central galaxy, either when the cloud collides with another cloud and therefore loses its energy, or through the slow loss of energy from ram pressure over time, then we can basically redraw the picture of how the galaxy formed. Okay, so in this picture here, you see the total mass inside the cooling radius, the purple line. That would be in a standard model, the amount of mass in the galaxy, which grows over time. But now, when you start cooling mass, instead of putting it right in the galaxy, Some of it goes in the hot gas core, low density hot gas core, which is able to maintain its temperature without radiating away. The rest of it goes in the clouds. It's only over time, as the clouds collide with each other, that the cloud's mass goes from being in a cloud into being in the galaxy. So the galaxy mass starts out near zero and only increases when clouds collide with each other. Now you see that the cloud mass actually stays constant. It's not because you have the same clouds. You're actually always losing clouds into the galaxy mass, but you're always getting new clouds that are coming out cooling from the total gas. And so you go through these three steps where you cool from the hot phase into the cloud phase, you move from the cloud phase into the galaxy phase. But you can see that the important result here, main thing to take away, is that instead of having 12 times 10 to the 10th solar masses of cold gas, we now have 6 times 10 in the galaxy, 4 times 10 in the hot phase inside of the cooling radius, and 2 times 10 to the 10th solar masses in warm clouds moving around in this hot phase. Now this is for a certain choice of cloud mass, and obviously what happens depends on the mass of the clouds, so there's different choices. This shows a range of cloud masses, and the blue line shows the total mass of the galaxy. So if the cloud masses are small, then there's lots of them, they collide with each other easily, and they get into the galaxy, so the galaxy mass is high. As you increase the cloud mass, the galaxy mass goes down and down and down, and when you get to a few times 10 to the 6, the clouds are massive enough that the galaxy mass is reduced into the band that's estimated by dynamical arguments to be the mass of the Milky Way. Okay, I've given you a picture. Now you may want to ask, is there anything else that supports this picture from being true? Well, if you look around our own Milky Way, you'll see a bunch of clouds at high velocity detected in H1. These clouds, their velocity dispersion is minimal if you assume that they're moving relative to the galactic center. They have angular sizes on average of a half a degree squared, and there's 2,000 of them in the southern sky. This is a picture of them, and we're not talking about the big blobs now. So you got the Milky Way, we're not talking about that, and there's these large complexes, we're not talking about that, we're talking about all the dots that are all floating around inside this galaxy. Well, to have a typical size of a half degree squared, the clouds I've just been describing would need to have masses of about 5 times 10 to the 6 solar masses. If they had that mass, there would be 2 times 10 to the 10th solar masses in clouds, which I showed you earlier, which is 4,000 clouds, 2,000 in the southern hemisphere, 2,000 in the northern hemisphere. So it seems that besides changing how cooling gets into the galaxy, the exact same clouds seem to be seen as HVCs. What else can we look around though and see? Well, these same clouds, if they were around other galaxies, which of course there's no reason to think that our galaxy is different than other galaxies, could be seen in absorption of quasars. These are seen, and this is a very long discussion, and I'm just going to highlight one point because it's for simplicity to show the effect I'm talking about. Chen et al. Has looked at the cross-correlation of carbon-4 systems and galaxies. And what they find is that within basically 100 kPc of the galaxy, you got a 67% chance of finding a carbon-4 system. And if you're outside this distance, then the chance goes down very low to 6%. So that's the data I'm showing right there. You got the one big bin out to 100, and a little bin down there. You have a very small percentage of chance of finding one if you're farther than 100. And the black line shows basically just the same cloud model I'm discussing. If you had those clouds, what would the probability of seeing it be as a function of the distance from the galaxy for a galaxy at a redshift of 0.5? And you see, again, we have very similar results to the data. Essentially, what we're seeing is that if you're within the cooling radius, then there's a two-thirds chance that you'll see a cloud. And once you get outside the cooling radius, where there really aren't any clouds, you have a 0% chance of seeing a cloud. Now, obviously, the real universe has more than one galaxy, so you have to deal with all different types of galaxies and all different types of cloud masses that have to do with different galaxies, so the modeling of this is much more complicated. This is just to try to show the basic power of looking at absorption systems and galaxies to be able to constrain the properties of clouds. I'm giving a medium distance. So the debate is either a megaparsec or usually less than 10 kpc, and we're saying they're in the 100 kpc range. Galactic. You have very arguments for both cases. I would say that that galactic is the one that has the least arguments against it, but that's because people haven't attacked it as much. That's only fair, because people have attacked the fountain method and the local group. Not galactic. See, the local group contradiction is because they're much more massive, but if you move them into 100 kpc, then they're a tenth the mass, and so therefore you're below the limits. So let me just mention briefly, because three of the main people involved in this discussion at higher redshift are here in the audience, and that is that I think that this same cloud model is also probably very relevant to the discussion of damp Lyman alpha systems at redshift 3 and the velocity fields inside of them, because if you have these clouds and the way they get disrupted, you can expect to see a much larger extent of H1, which will give you very different kinematics than just considering single galaxies. But that, again, something that has to be dealt with in more detail, and I won't deal with it right now. The last thing I'll turn to before wrapping up is the luminosity function. The luminosity function shows a sharp cutoff at around the Milky Way's luminosity, but there's no such feature in the mass function. So semi-analytic models basically put this in by hand. However, it turns out, quite to our surprise, that when you consider multi-phase cooling, this actually comes out naturally. What happens is, if you consider the amount of mass that cools inside the cooling radius, the black line at the top shows you the total amount of mass inside the cooling radius. Now, as you can see, the red line, the dashed line, is the total amount of hot core that maintains itself inside the cooling radius, and that happens to increase because of the cooling time, basically the same way that the dark matter, or the total matter mass, increases. And so what you get left is the amount of mass that cools. The purple line basically becomes flat at about something like 2 times 10 to the 11, and as you change in mass by a large fraction, you don't actually increase the amount of mass that cools. And once you actually take into account the amount that's in the clouds, it looks even flatter. Basically, we let it cool until the hot gas density equals the cooling density. So then it doesn't need to cool anymore, because that density of the gas could not cool. Right, so it's the amount of gas that would be able to maintain itself without cooling over the time scale, as old as the halo is. And the remainder has to cool out in order to get there, right? Yeah, everything goes to the galaxy, right? No, because in the old model, there's no two phases, so everything is cooled, even the hot stuff. You don't maintain any hot phase. That's the difference there. So the result, you can see the luminosity function is interesting. Now, once you include the multiphase cooling, you significantly reduce, and in fact, get the sharp feature as far as the total amount of mass that cools. And if you look at what the central galaxy mass is, now you see that we are actually below what's actually seen. If you take this model literally seriously, you couldn't even get a 2 times 10 to 11 solar mass galaxy, because you can never get that high in this model. Now, of course, this is still somewhat very simplistic model, just descriptive. Obviously, in the real world, you have stuff like mergers, where galaxies that have formed actually double their mass or increase mass by merging in other pathways. So you would expect this to be pushed up based on that effect. But you can see that this sharp cutoff is easily reproduced just because you basically allow for the hot core inside galaxies. Yes, but it doesn't move strikingly, but yeah, it does depend on redshift, yes. I don't have the redshift, yeah, I haven't done a very high redshift, so. It moves, but I don't have the actual numbers. But you can look for that cutoff. Right, let me try to wrap things up. I just put here some other implications, because if you start thinking about the fact that there's clouds hanging around in all your galaxies, there's all kinds of places where it can come back to have an implication. So let me just list three of them just to kind of spread the ideas, but then there's many more, and you can talk about more later if you want. One thing is that it may have an important effect on the angular momentum problem. In simulations, you tend to lose all your angular momentum when you merge. If a lot of the mass is still in clouds, that may change the results that you get. When these, in very large mass halos, these clouds might be a go above the gene's mass. That suggests that you may be able to have clouds that collapse and form their own stellar systems with no dark matter associated with them. And these clouds, the substructure moving around the galaxy, may contribute to the lensing signal where people are looking for substructure, dark matter substructure. There also may be baryon substructure moving around. These are just kind of very different fields where these things are important. So let me just wrap up. Okay, when gas cools, we expect to get a two-phase medium. That's the natural result. To survive, warm clouds should be between 10 to the 5th and 10 to the 8th solar masses. In order to get the observed Milky Way mass, clouds should be 10 to the 6th to 10 to the 8th solar masses. To get the observed properties of high-velocity clouds, you want clouds that are 3 to 7 times 10 to the 6th solar masses, and a similar range of masses for the clouds would give you basically the property, or at least association, of carbon-4 systems and galaxies. Irrespective of the cloud mass, allowing a low-density hot core sets an upper limit on the amount of mass that can cool at a few times 10 to the 11th solar masses, which naturally seems to explain the sharp cutoff in luminosity function. And so, warm clouds at the right mass range can explain the mass of the Milky Way, high-velocity clouds, QSO absorption systems, and luminosity function. Thank you.
Art? Some question. What happens when you have a low-mass halo with variable temperatures of 20,000 Kelvin in the cooling time? Is it low-density? Is it right that hot phase is cooling time?
Yeah. So in lower, when you go to... What? It doesn't work. It doesn't. In fact, the two phases are so small and separated that you don't even have to check the two phases. At about 100 kilometers a second, halos. Yeah, or 80. Yeah, but fairly massive. Once you get to lower, it's only 80 and above. Below that, it basically has no effect. Yeah, and there's also metallicity dependence, clearly, which is not insignificant because it's a fairly large difference from cooling rates. That's true. But at least,
I think what you have to do at some point anyway is embed that whole picture into kind of giving
you. Yeah, sure.
So essentially, your whole thing was incorporated.
Yeah, no, no. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, my implication there is only that once you consider merging systems, having the mass in clouds may help you during the merging process and not losing it from some kind of dynamical friction process. But yeah, obviously that you need to have that in order to have the mass safe, the angular momentum safe. Yeah. They will merge and maintain, right. Maintain the mass in the clouds and maintain the angular momentum of the merging system until later on. Well, how big is the impact on the disk? Well, see, okay, so it's a... Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. But the thing that's one worry that's related to that is that if one of these things smacks into the disk, that's a lot of energy, that's a lot of damage you may do. So another thing which I haven't had a chance to discuss in here though is if you calculate the tidal field across one of the clouds, you can calculate how close the cloud has to be to the disk before it gets highly disrupted, because it's only being pressure confined, and so you can easily overcome the pressure and the cloud actually turns into a big stream. And so at about within 15 to 20 kpc, when the clouds get that close, they're going to get disrupted and turn into large arcs, is what you see in the HVC data, that we have evidence for this. Where did the HVC go? Here, we have evidence that there seems to be a number of large complexes which are argued to have been highly disrupted from a single cloud at earlier times. So very early on to us, within like 8 to 10, and these ones have distance measurements, so we know these are 8 to 10 or 5 to 10 kpc, the cloud gets disrupted. And so then when it actually gets into the Milky Way, it comes in a bunch of small pieces. So the damage is small. Well, it's basically, essentially all you have to add is the cloud mass. I mean, and the cloud mass, of course, can be a temperature a function of a halo mass or some other parameters, but that's really, that's the main uncertainty is the cloud mass. I mean, the cooling is all the same semantic cooling, so there's no change there. You know, you might have to worry about something, the initial velocity or something like this, but I don't think that those are significant. Well, we haven't modeled in detail the cloud infall mechanisms. We've just said either you lose how much energy you need to lose in order to get down there. So it's right, because yeah. Well, the difference is that, but that step we include because that's okay. So what's done right now is that people assume basically it's the dynamical time, it's how long it takes the gas to get into the center. Right.
So you have to make some additional, you have to get the stuff from the 100 kilopascal down to 10 kilopascal.
You call it a random motion.
So there's some uncertainty there, but I think that those are fairly, you know, the difference, but if you make some rough collision time argument, and then you do a detailed modeling of the cloud's properties, you know, if an order of a few, it's going to be the same. So you can try to model it better, but you can roughly estimate what the collision times are. Well, so we assume that they quickly basically become, as Jesus is saying, is virilized with the rest of the system, which is if they form anywhere and they have any kind of starting motions, that was basically what will happen. Well, the main thing you need is, you know, something like 10 to the 8th orders of resolution, then you'd be fine. Yeah. Yeah, in clusters. It's ironic, isn't it? I don't know exactly. It seems that so people have already done this work for clusters a long time ago, but then it turned out that those models seemed to be right. But people didn't explore what the implication was for galaxies, where I think that the implications are very interesting, and yet it's not clear why the clusters is wrong. I think that the main thing probably has to do with either some kind of feedback in the clusters or conduction effects, you know, conduction is much stronger in the clusters, being the why that you see a difference, that basically it is no longer so important, the two-phase medium in the cluster. But it's an issue, and there's, and where the transition, you know, happens, of when, how far up the mass scale this goes before those other effects become very important, is also something that's not clear. What's that? What's the temperature? Well, we just assume that the temperature is given by the maximum rotation velocity. So, for example, the Milky Way is at 1,000,000 degrees. But it ranges, pretending the halo mass, up, you know. No, it's just something that comes out. I don't know if there is. That's what we're saying. We're suggesting that if you saw such a thing, it would probably, I would say, be evidence that something like this is going on. Whether or not, I haven't found anyone who's, there is, I mean, people will say that there is evidence, or there is, how should we say it? People who observe dwarfs will say that there isn't strong evidence for dark matter in many of them. So, I don't know. Depends. Right, depends on the type of dwarf you're talking about. So, elliptical. Yeah. So I don't know, observationally, I don't know where this state is. I'm hoping people will think about it and let us know. Okay. You're up then. Can't ask any more questions.